Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens. Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.
Ahoy!
Ahoy!
Oh,
can you here? I am in this in the conning tower of this nuclear submarine.
Yes.
What do you think?
I like it. I might perhaps be able to steer my jetpack down to the conning tower. See if I can. Oh, I misjudged that one. Up I go. Up I go. Up I go. Now back I come. See if I can do it on a better pass. There we are. It's going to be landing a straw. I'm coming. Going to come. I'm going to land on your face. I'm sorry, Craig. I'm sorry.
Doesn't matter.
There we go.
That's fine.
I didn't mean it to go like that. That was probably the most dramatic of our meetings. Ah, Craig Children,
the most
I
dramatic
presume.
So far. Well, Martin Bain-Jones, yes. As I live and breathe. That's very funny that you've got a jetpack this week. You've got a jetpack this week because...
Yes.
They are all the rage now, aren't they, jetpacks? Have you heard? This is the latest this is the latest thing in Silicon Valley. They think we are all going to be travelling around in little sort of hover cars and personal jetpacks, which is very odd.
Yes.
Because this is what we always thought the future
Absolutely
would be like.
Absolutely right, yes.
But it never was. And the joke was... Where's my jetpack, wasn't it? It was like, come on, all you futurologists. Predictions right.
What will they be powered on?
Where's my jetpack?
What's going to power the jetpack? Surely not. It can't be the dread fuel. It won't be two-stroke, will it? That's not going to go down well.
Mixing that up, can you?
No.
You can't be mixing up some two-stroke every time
not.
You want to hop off to the shops. That's not going to work.
Anyway.
What would it be? Maybe it would be nuclear-powered. Maybe that's where...
Bit of nuclear, bit of fission. Or is it fusion? Fission.
It'd have to be jet fuel, wouldn't it? I mean, that'd be the only way to do it, wouldn't it? Have a jet engine.
And the clue is in the name, surely. Yes.
Yeah.
You're
jet
right.
Pack.
I can't see that catching on. But anyway, what fun!
Right.
Well, ahoy! How very exciting! And today, for fun, I thought we might have a look at music with a music.
Ooh. A roving brief.
A roving brief. Yes.
Oh, Martin, that's very exciting.
Well, you and I started out as we were broadsheet pop journalists, weren't we? You were on the Independent on Sunday, I believe, in the pop section. Is that right?
Yes. What was that? It was that review of Skunk and Nancy that really, broke me clear of the pack.
Absolutely.
Do you remember that?
Absolutely. Yes. You got skin absolutely to a T there, didn't you?
I really did. I was right in there at the beginning.
I
mean, I saw that coming such a long way off. You know, and I got myself down to Sounds of the City in Bristol, and the rest is history.
That is
was
right,
there
a
review for you, Martin? That
For me, really? I don't know. I mean, I think it was always the Leeds Sounds of the City. Sounds of the City, where I think you and I were. You weren't particularly taken with Muse. I thought Muse were the coming band. Muse.
That's right. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Why not? Why not have a glam rock band with a concert pianist in it?
I'll tell you why not, because they haven't got a single tune. But there you go.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Also, once you've noticed that the lead singer, every time he takes a breath, he goes, it's quite annoying.
Yes, that is annoying.
It's quite annoying. I mean, my goodness, well, one could rake over the lukewarm coals of our careers in pop music journalism forever. Actually, I mean, that would be fun. But yes, where is pop at the moment? Would you say, Craig?
Well, I'll tell you exactly where it is. It's in South Korea. That's where pop is right now. I think obviously what's happened in the UK is quite remarkable. It used to be very tribal. Music in the UK. Do you remember? There was everybody had their tribe.
Yes.
And then everyone had the guilty pleasure of pop on top of that.
Yes,
so
that's true. Yes.
You were either in the sort of mod tradition, or you were in the gribo, the rocker, the metalhead tradition.
Yes.
You sat on either side of that schism. We had all these different little tribes, and then, as I say, pop as a guilty pleasure. Well, that tribalism, that seems to have vanished. I mean, the in terms of teenagers now, it's in a slightly more ironic, distanced way, hence the popularity of K-pop.
But it is very interesting, because, of course, we grew up, we cut our music teeth, as it were, in an era when pop music was the very lifeblood of young people's culture. It was fed to us, and we lapped it up in an almost religious way. You know, the personalities of the Radio 1 DJs, for example, were known to us. They were like sort of older brothers, or slightly sinister unmarried uncles in some cases to us. But also, yes, tuning in absolutely religiously on Thursdays, just after Tomorrow's World, we'd watch Top of the Pops, and we get a glimpse of our idols. There was such currency, there was such money, there was such a superstructure of support and promotion, and that has totally gone now, I think, hasn't it? The idea of currency.
It has. It was a monoculture in its way, wasn't
yes.
it? But it was also, what was interesting about it is it was a sort of mono counterculture. That was what was really interesting.
Yes.
I think that is what I really miss in music now. It feels like that countercultural element, that sort of disregard for authority, but a disregard for authority that doesn't find its that finds its expression in a weird haircut or clothes that are going to. It's a very sort of arty.
Yes.
It's a very sort of arty protest, isn't it? You know.
Yes, I mean, counterculture. I mean, you know, we've got Richard Danbutt, No Bacon, throwing water, you know, the Chumbawamba man, at the Brit Awards, throwing water over John Prescott. I mean, there have always been those sorts of acts of insolence against the establishment. But I have to say, I have always felt bitterly let down by not just pop music, but by culture in general. You know, I was reaching my pop cultural maturity around the time of the New Romantics, you know, and the real visceral thrill of punk bands like Bow Wow Wow, or actually more particularly Adam and the Ants. You've got an extraordinary, you know, these wonderful Brindisi drums they used to play in Adam and the Ants, two drummers, and the chanting and the face makeup, these are really truly thrilling outpourings of energy and creativity, and it was wonderful. And then we went from that, just at the point when you're thinking, God, this is so exciting, the promise here is really extraordinary, where are we going to go next? And where we went next was pastiche.
Yeah.
Went to some really quite dull, just, you know, I've got nothing against the Thompson twins, but I mean, really? Really? The Bell Stars? Really? I guess the rave culture did bring one last final sort of throb of something original, because I suppose the ecstasy promoted its own sort of musical hungers. But since then, it's all been pastiche. You read about people who go to history lessons, and they, instead of people teaching them history, they just go, "Oh, just watch Blackadder. Just watch some Blackadder. There you are. Pop that on." And they just go out for a fag. It's like that. It's what happened with music. They're just literally just putting on Blackadder for us and buggering off for a quick Lambert round the bike sheds.
Well, let me cheer you up just by...
Yes.
Let me cheer you up just by...
Oh, please do.
This is what I think is perhaps hopeful with K-pop, is there is a slight edge to K-pop. There is something there. It's not completely... Well, think of, for example, that fantastic stunt that Donald Trump fell foul of. I mean, this is going back...
Vaguely remember it. I can't remember exactly what it...
It was during Black Lives Matter. It was just during the Black Lives Matter protest.
Yes.
The K-pop band, BTS, they have 26 million followers.
I thought you said 26 million members of the band.
It's not far off, but
yeah,
26 million followers on Twitter. So they started booking tickets for Donald Trump's rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He ended up speaking in front of 6,200 supporters and had to close the overflow area outside, having thought that he had sold a million tickets.
Wow.
He thought he'd sold a million tickets. Very, very sadly, had to depart, you know, in Air Force One after a really underwhelming, empty stadium. Now, I'm not saying that's the most profound political gesture ever, but it is...
Yes, I wouldn't say that's counterculture. I'd say that they're tapping into a culture that that doesn't really...
Yes,
doesn't really require much originality from them,
exactly,
actually.
Exactly, yeah, and K-pop is stadium pop, and if anything, Donald Trump is trespassing onto their turf, not the other way around. But I still think there is a sort of a glimmering ember of hope for music. I do. And if I were 14, which sometimes in my head I am, I might find myself occasionally... popping a little MP3 of K-pop, finding my finger dwindling down the Spotify list towards BTS as some sort of tribute. That can't be a bad thing.
Do you have a favourite K-pop band? Is there a particular one you really
The only one I can remember is, of course, the Gangnam thing, which was just... I mean, that was...
Yes.
Do you remember
Psy.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that was...
What a funny thing that was. It was
really extraordinary, wasn't it?
What was so clever about it was it sort of... You watched it thinking, really? And you thought it was... So you're so busy thinking it was ridiculous that you weren't noticing that it had somehow lodged itself like a sort of coronavirus cell in your system. And before you knew it, you were sort of thinking, something's just so ludicrous about this dance that the guy was doing, as well as all the other
PSY, as he was called. Yes, I mean, is he still going?
No, how you call it? PSY, not Psy. Oh, no, maybe PSY.
Oh, Psy.
There's Flight of the Sky. I don't know if you're familiar with Flight of the Sky.
Flight of the Sky. What's that? Is that a move?
No. It sounds like a move. No, Flight of the Sky. I mean, it's a slightly curiously named K-pop band.
Oh,
NCT 127 as well. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Drunken Tiger. I saw
and
Tiger.
What do they sound like?
The Tiger
like?
Saw Man. They sound like this. They're very kinetic on stage. They move very beautifully, all as one. It's a bit like, imagine if Diversity sang sort of bubblegum pop with a quite a sort of with a sort of heavy, high NRG bass and backline. And it's sort of... I don't know, it's bubblegum pop, but with shading. It's like bubblegum pop with borders, with edges.
It's very interesting, isn't it, the whole sort of emergence of South Korea as a cultural force as well? Because, of course, you've got the fantastic filmmaking there as well, you know, thinking of the Parasite that did absolutely. So well in the Oscars. Oh, and,
that was, oh, BAFTAs, wasn't
really
that wonderful, my goodness. Oh, I thought that was, I never saw it, but I thought it was just wonderful, what I read about it. And, you know, the idea of them going up to the house on the hill and then being washed back down at the end, flushed back down like so many turds in a sewer, in a cloaca.
Yes, yeah, very yes. Cloaca. What a wonderful word. Yes,
thank you.
Yes, isn't that the exit point of a bird, a cloaca?
There you are. It's also it was the sewer in Rome, of course, the cloaca.
Oh, I see. But, yes.
But what is it? I wonder. It's almost as if K-pop, it's taken a leaf or two out of the Strictly playbook. There's a word that we all use a lot now. In that it's embraced the kitsch, hasn't it?
That's very, very interesting, isn't it? Oh, you raise a very interesting point there, Martin, because is it kitsch or is it camp? I would say it's embracing the camp is what
well,
it's
I
doing.
Do, well,
isn't that...
But
isn't
that? In a way, I can't really reconcile myself to that, because I find myself thinking, well, isn't it all a bit cynical? Isn't there something disposable and ultimately pappy about it? I don't know. I think we all had a hankering for something more artisanal in terms of our pop music, and I'm sure that's where the sort of going back, obviously, the Ed Sheerans and moving back, the Coldplays, all of these people had a very... And Muse, of course, the band that I like to think I launched back at the Sounds of the City Festival in Leeds. But, there was that indie, the resurgence of the indie scene, you know, the Arcade Fires and the Arctic Monkeys and the Shins and Tudor Cinema Club, all of these sort of these bands that have come out of the sort of they've recognised that there is a real hunger there for something that is artisanal, and just at the point where you're thinking, oh yes, that's rather nice, a little bit of sourdough pop that's been sort of, you know. Or rock, I should say, sourdough rock. And just at that point, then suddenly someone comes out with... someone's just turned up with some pink cakes. Did you see that U2 featuring in the Irish Rich List?
I did notice that. Yes.
Yes.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? Irish Rich List, yes, published this week, of course, by Times newspapers. Yes. Very, very interesting. It's extraordinary, isn't it? All the things they're into. What fascinated me was that a lot of the money has nothing to do with music at all, and it seemed very. Goodness me! It seemed very funny. Some of the things that Bono, particularly. Had been investing in. So,
what's he been investing in? Tell me.
Well, so, you know, there was kind of lots of, there was some kind of tech venture.
Oh, that's right, in Silicon Valley. Yes, I read about that, yes.
Elevation Partners, I think it's called. And they made some sort of pretty key investments in platforms like Facebook really early on. So,
yes. And then, I mean, he's going to be worth a billion or so, isn't he? Probably Bono.
Oh, at least. And then there was a, there was a great thing on there, I think, about him having bought some sort of shopping centre or something, which really made me laugh. It was kind of...
Yes.
Yeah. It's about the most un-rock and roll thing.
Well,
this
once
is
you
the
get
problem,
to that
is,
level, though, you are, suppose, you've got to invest. Yeah. You know, you take the advice of people and say, well, yes, well, I'll invest in that. Sounds like a very good... That's going to be a nice money spender. I think quite a lot of offshore stuff going on there, I think, with the U2. Well, make tax history.
Make tax history. and there was another really nice thing in the article, which was there's a hotel, I think, on the shore of, you know, in a hotel.
Oh,
in Dublin.
The Clarence.
The Clarence.
Oh, I've stayed at the Clarence.
You stayed there. Oh, brilliant.
Nice.
What's it like?
It's very like, you know, Le Mercure in Antwerp.
I have heard of it. Yeah.
If you were to add maybe another starter. No, it is jolly nice. I've eaten there. Perhaps I didn't stay there, but I've eaten there. It was very nice. We had some very nice dinner there one night.
But what I liked about that was it seemed like there's a three-way investment there, I think. I think maybe yes. The Edge owns a third, and God, I'm struggling to.
Larry Mullen's probably got the other third. He's probably got a stake. Adam Clayton's got a.
No, Adam Clayton has not got a stake in it. I think Adam Clayton apparently invests in art. Is that right?
They said, Adam, will you be investing in this hotel we're putting together? And he goes, sorry, they basically sound from Belfast, don't they? Would you be interested in maybe putting some money into this hotel we're investing in now? What do you think? And he goes, fuck, a hotel? I'm not putting my money in a hotel. What? Or maybe you'd like to be, you interested in putting some money in the shopping centre. There's a shopping centre in Jalalabad that we're all putting some money into. I don't know if that's
interesting. It's in Dubai. We've got a shopping centre in Dubai. Would you like to invest in us?
I don't know if you're interested, but we're starting a space programme.
I'm not going to put any money in that.
I love how Northern Irish Adam Clayton's got. That's great. I love how high-pitched and Northern Irish he is.
I'm not putting my money in there. Put your money in the tea in China. I'm not putting that in there. I'll buy some pictures, sure.
I'll buy some baskets.
Be gone now.
Oh, come on, it's a great place. It's got a sock shop. It's got a high and mighty.
Oh!
It's got a wonderful accessories. They've got some fantastic stuff in Dubai. It's got a wonderful footlocker.
Does it sell pictures? No, it doesn't sell pictures.
It's a fine place. They've got marble there. The little squares of marble you can sit on and you can talk to your friends outside, books, etc. And then maybe a bit further along, you've got, I think we got in Starbucks in there now, which is great.
Do they do the frozen yogurt?
Wait a minute, Bono's trying to get our attention. What? Okay, with the bass, come in here now. Okay, yeah, we're on. Okay.
We'll talk about it later. Okay, goodbye.
Did I mention there's a very small concession of John Lewis in there? Anyway, I will talk about it later. Okay, Count Me and Bono. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes, I am.
Yes. So I'm doing you now. I don't know. Just trying to talk like you. I sort of missed the accent runway. So by such an enormous margin, I came back as you. That's terrible.
That's quite bizarre. We both come back as each as different people. We went off to the Clarence Hotel.
So there we are. We're back in our normal clothes.
Oh, there we are.
Speaking of
musical heroes.
Yes.
Because despite what you might think, you two are musical heroes.
Oh, I do. I absolutely. They've never put a foot wrong. As far as I'm concerned, musically speaking, I think they are just. I adore and always have adored you two, and I will continue to adore them.
Have you ever seen that brilliant? If you haven't, it's so good. It's called This Might Get Loud.
It is the
most fantastic music documentary. This Might Get Loud. It's one of the, I don't know why it's not better known, but it's one of the greatest music documentaries I've ever seen. So basically it's The Edge, and it's Jimmy Page, and Jack White, and the three of them, it's this simple. They set up their gear in a rehearsal room, and they play. That is it. But each of them talks about their influences. They talk to each other about the songs they want to play. They collaborate with one another in this just absolute magical day of music.
So they're just jamming. Really,
they're just jamming, basically. Yeah, they just... And you know, three generations, those perfect three generations, Jimmy Page, The Edge, Jack White. I mean, all of them just phenomenal guitarists, but
just
so...
incredible, yes.
So creative. So different, you know, and...
And all of them actually, all of them responsible for creating a very individual texture. It's all about texture in each case.
Yes,
and what
exactly
they managed to achieve with guitar. I mean, and unmistakable Page, unmistakable Edge, and unmistakable White.
And Jimmy Page, really, I mean, that, and of course, pretty much spanning the whole of rock guitar, really, because Jimmy Page was there at the very beginning, player in the 60s, playing on those very early... You know, the very first, you know, the very, very first rock tracks right there, back there in the early 60s. And The Edge, of course, inventing all those incredible... I mean, there's a fantastic bit where they film him sort of in his own studio creating some of those sounds and messing around with the different effects and things. It's absolutely
brilliant. Oh, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see
it. But the point I was trying to get to was, speaking of musical heroes... did you see that Stevie Nicks has got an album?
Yes, I did see that.
And I have
what
to
is
say...
What is she, 70-something now, isn't she? She's...
So I saw her last year before, playing with Fleetwood Mac, which was just absolutely extraordinary. Saw her them at Wembley, and she was doing...
Wow.
The thing I remember about Stevie Nicks, she had all these... She'd kind of... she'd hung a lot of sort of stuff off her microphone. That's what was kind of interesting. She kind of sort of personalised it with lots of bits of sort of black lace and things.
Off her microphone?
Off yes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's
rather
exciting.
Sort of, rather in a rather sort of devil woman kind of way.
Yes. And
of course, no Lindsay Buckingham, because they'd had a massive fucking row.
Massive fight. I'm not sure she and Buckingham will ever see each other again.
And you know, the reason was... the reason was that Stevie Nicks, I think, was given a Lifetime Achievement Award.
So she was.
And went on stage, and famously, Lindsay Buckingham was standing behind her in the lineup when she goes on stage to collect this award. And it's the expression on his face. When she watched the awards back later on and she saw the expression on his face, which is one of pure contempt, she cancelled... Well, basically, she said, it's him or me. She said, either he gets fired or I'm leaving Fleetwood Mac and I'm not. And they had this massive multi-million tour planned. And, you know, at the end of the day, what could poor old Mick do with his two dangly balls?
He had to say, right, Buckingham, sling your hawk.
You know, it's got to be Mick, the dangly balls, and Stevie Nicks. It ain't going to be Mick, the dangly balls, and Lindsay Buckingham. No. Lindsay stayed
home.
Now,
remind me what the dangly balls thing is.
Oh, well...
What's the dangly balls?
Mick Fleetwood has famously, in the cover of Rumours, he has these two dangly, very long dangly balls...
testicles
hanging sort of almost between his knees. They're not his testicles. They are two sort of decoration. They're two.
Oh, I see. But I mean, he's a very tall man.
I don't imagine he has the tightest of scrotums either. But that is not
of scrotar. I should think probably the dangliest, or among the dangliest. I'd have thought
among the dangliest.
Big tall bearded fellow like him.
But yeah, these were decoration. Anyway, Lindsay Buckingham then unleashed the most ginormous lawsuit, which I believe was settled to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. But anyway, there we go. They went on.
He should be investing that in a. He should invest that in a dry cleaners or something, maybe in.
He should go on to
Addis Ababa, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, go in with Bono on a chain of Medivets.
Martin, just one quick question
before we go.
If there was one band from, I'm going to say the 90s, because I'm guessing that's one of your favourite periods in music.
Yes.
If there's one band from the 90s you would like to see make a comeback, who is it?
I I mean, oh, as you probably remember, I was a big Talking Heads fan. So, but that's not really the 90s, is it? More 80s. I mean, they're just in the 90s. I would love Talking Heads to come back. It's never going to happen, of course. But
why not? Why is it not going to happen? Do they not?
Because I don't believe. I think the Tom Tom Club element and David Byrne, I don't think really see eye to eye. I don't think. No.
So why do bands fall out like that? Why is it just
Because
that argue with each other and destroy every single bit of success?
Because what they never bank on is success. Is the truth. I think they don't bank on success. They always, you know, they put together, the arrangements are all made when things are very, you know, it's all very loose because everybody's travelling around in the back of a van that belongs to the drummer's dad. And that's roughly how it all works. And that's when it's like that, it's all very happy and it's great. But then when things start to go really well, that's when things start to go really wrong, I think.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, all kinds of little jealousies and concerns and worries. Everybody concerned over whose songs make it onto the album track listing, and everyone worried about what their deal is and who gets the nicer room and who's the last person to turn up before they go on stage, you know, as they're waiting in the wings. You go, oh, Adam! Oh! You're always so late when you turn up now. You're always so late. No, it just brings them pictures!
I think, actually, U2 is an example of a band that sort of stayed together very well, because I think
actually, genuinely, again, that is just to demonstrate that I'm just literally having mindless fun, because actually, you're completely right. U2, you know, there were various bands. I was remembering bands from the 80s, bands such as, sadly, old Stuart Adamson took an early exit, but Big Country, there's no reason why they shouldn't have gone on and been huge.
They were fantastic. Yes, in a Big Country.
Yes. Oh, Big Country.
Dreams Stay With You Like a Lover's Voice on the Mountainside.
Lover's Voice on the Mountainside, yes, exactly, yeah. Right, yeah. What band would you like to come back from the 90s, Greg?
Reef. Do you remember Reef?
Oh, God, put your hands up. Put your hands
up. Put your hands up.
Wasn't that them?
Put your hands up. Yes, absolutely, that's them. And didn't they have another great song called The Circle? No.
That was a good song.
Saturday afternoon.
Ocean colour scene. Ocean colour scene.
Through the window. Oh, that's Ocean Colour Scene. Oh, yes. Look at myself. Oh,
Ocean Colour Scene.
Reef.
I rather like Cooler Shaker.
Strike Reef. Cooler Shaker were good. Soup Dragons. I like
Ocean Colour Scene.
Scratch all the...
Soup Dragons, yes.
Saturday afternoon, the sunlight pours like wine through the window. Martin, I'm just looking out across the bay there, and I can see those albatrosses circling over the reef. You get it?
Over your submarine. Oh, over the reef.
I think the ocean colour scene here is one of great beauty.
Oh,
and
like
perhaps to be enjoyed from a mono ski. Fancy
you're gonna
kicking your mono ski into action with me and just sailing off now.
Heading off to
the
sunset.
We won't say ahoy, we'll say ahoy to the listeners, but not to each other. We won't say dehoy. Yes. To each other, we'll just go off together.
No, because we're going off into the sunset together.
Into the sunset
That's nice.
Together.
But we'll say dehoy to the listeners.
Dehoy to the listeners.
Dehoy
now.
Dehoy.
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 Time Ghost was written and created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Claire Broughton and Andy Goddard. This was a Hattrick podcast.